The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
So last week we dealt with Blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who has given understanding to the rooster to distinguish between night and day. And blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who did not make me a Gentile. Blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who did not make me a slave. Blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who did not make me a woman. And the women say, blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who made me as your will. What is the fundamental theme of these blessings? Choice. Right? Choice. The first blessing focuses in on an animal that naturally chooses between darkness and light. Right? Between darkness and light. If we understand the first blessing as you have given the power of distinction to the heart, then it even becomes more clear that it's talking about choice. And there are two ways of understanding the first blessing. Some translated to mean rooster, some translated to be heart. Okay, what would the rooster be doing there in the morning? It's the appreciation that all of reality together serves God, and that the rooster and his ability to choose in his own intuitive way contributes to the full expression of our service to God. The rooster wakes us up. Or if we go in a simple sense, then it's referring to the heart, and it's talking about the idea that the heart can distinguish between night and day, which is good and evil. Okay, we have the ability to choose. The next blessing is, blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who did not create me a non-Jew. I am not like a non-Jew. A non-Jew at a certain level can rely on their intuition and their natural coordination with the process of life at a certain point after the seven mitzvot. Right? After the seven mitzvot. I have a friend who is in the process of conversion. And he said that he discovered that once he decided that he wanted to become Jewish, everything went wrong in his life. Things started to become more difficult. Everything used to go just like that. And now that he's chosen to become Jewish, he's amazed how many things are much more difficult now in terms of trying to make those choices and make it happen. Right? But he still wants to be Jewish. Right? And when I asked him, why do you want to be Jewish? He said, because I want more free choice. Right? Amazing thing to say. I want more free choice, which obviously means more struggle in my life and less ability to rely on just the flow, that ingrained sense of in sync with life. So I have to say to myself, I am not a non-Jew. If I would have said I am a Jew, that would not have dealt with what the context of these blessings are. These blessings, as I will soon show you, are basically antidotes to the desire to shirk responsibility of making choices. Right? And I can show you that every single one of them does that. And to say I am a Jew isn't the point, because the point over here within the context of what we're dealing with is, look, there are so many people in the world and they don't have to do all these mitzvot. Right? Why do I have to do all these mitzvot? The answer is because you are not a non-Jew. Right? That's why that's the answer. Right. Of course, generally, you know, it would be positive to say, blessed be you, God, who made me a Jew. But within the context of the purpose of what these blessings are coming to do, right, that's not realistic. Because what these blessings are doing is they are an antidote to the desire to shirk free choice. Okay? Blessed be you, God, you did not make me a slave. Blessed be you, God, you did not make me a woman. I look at women, they don't have to do the mitzvot. My wife doesn't have to get up and go to minyan in the morning. Right, but I must remind myself, you did not make me a woman. I cannot rely on that. I have to make more free choices in my life. I cannot depend on the in sync that I would like to flow with. Okay? And a woman said, blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who makes me as your will. At that point, a woman recognizes that she is more like God's will. Right? And that point, that is her strength. You must recognize that her strength is to rely sometimes, not completely, of course, nobody can, but sometimes on her intuition, okay, her ability to flow. Now with that in mind, I would like you now to look at the next blessing. Blessed be you, God, King of the universe, who has opened up the eyes of the blind. Now, again, why couldn't this be positive? Why couldn't it simply say, blessed be you, God, who gave me sight? Right? Why does it have to be in this negative? So we see that the first three blessings were not so different than the rest, because the rest is also, you open the eyes of the blind, implying that I could have been blind, but I am not blind. Right? Just like I could have been a non-Jew, right? But I am not a non-Jew. Right? So it's not as if these first three blessings really strayed from the direction of the blessings, because they go in the same line. I mean, it's the same pitch, the same key, that they're all meant. They're an antidote, and we're trying to figure out what's the antidote. I can show you that it's all relating to free choice. So on the first level, simple level, of course, you know, you've opened up the eyes of the blind. We appreciate, hey, we're not blind. But at a deeper level, why would I say to myself, you've opened up the eyes of the blind? Which would imply that for some reason, I'm under the impression that I could be blind, but I'm not. Now, what would that mean? What kind of blind would we be talking about? How could this relate to free choice? If the hypothesis here is that these are actually relating to free choice and an antidote towards them, how could this fit in to that context? So how's it an antidote? A person would claim they're blind. One of the things people do, whether they're conscious of it or not, is they pretend they're blind. Right? Not physically blind, but spiritually blind. In other words, to give you an example, I remember I was listening to a conversation of these two fellows in yeshiva. And this one fellow said to his friend, I'm leaving the yeshiva on Sunday to continue my world travels. And he'd been in the yeshiva for about 3-4 months. And the other fellow said, wow, I'm really shocked. How come you're leaving all of a sudden? He said, well, you know, I feel it's time to go. So he says, but do you like it here? He says, oh, I love it here. He says, and in terms of the meaning and the guidance it's offering you in your life, he says, oh, incredible, incredible. In the amount of time that I've been traveling, I haven't seen anything like this. I'm just pleasantly shocked and surprised. He said, oh, wonderful. So why are you leaving? Right? Why are you leaving? He said, because I'm searching for truth. Uh-huh. Well, and how long have you been searching for truth? I've been traveling for the last 1.5 years throughout the world looking for truth. Uh-huh. And so in the 1.5 years that you've been looking for truth and direction in your life, have you found anything that comes close to this? Right. So, oh no, nothing. I mean, this is just really unbelievable. What I gained here in the yeshiva is just exceptional. So he says, so why are you leaving? He said, because you never know. Right. I don't know. I haven't seen everything yet. Right. You never know. How can I make a choice? How can I make a choice to stay here when I haven't seen everything? In other words, I claim that I am blind. There are certain things that I haven't yet seen, and therefore I cannot really make a free choice yet. But that's all based on an illusion. An illusion and misconception that a free choice is the same thing as a conclusion. They're not the same thing at all. A conclusion and a free choice are very, very different. What's the difference between a free choice and a conclusion? Anyone know? What's the difference between a free choice and a conclusion? 2 + 2 = 4. That's a conclusion, right? But very few things in our lives are conclusions. Because a conclusion is based on a concern that there will no longer be any doubts. Right? No doubts whatsoever. Very few things in our lives have no doubts. Judaism is not a conclusion. It's a choice. What does that mean? Free choice doesn't mean it doesn't matter. Generally people say, it's my choice, it doesn't matter. No. Choice really matters. Because if it doesn't make a difference if I eat a pear or an apple, then that's not a free choice. Right? There's no consequence. What's the difference? That's not a choice. By definition, a choice means there are very serious consequences to whether I choose this or that. If there are no serious consequences, what kind of choice is this? So the greater the consequences, the greater the significance of choice. Okay? But choice means that there's always a doubt. Because if there wasn't a doubt, it wouldn't be a choice, it'd be a conclusion. And in particular with Judaism, people have this mistaken need to try and prove it beyond the shadow of a doubt. But by definition, that doesn't fit. Because if Judaism is a relationship with God, a relationship must be through free choice. If someone fixes you up with their daughter, holds a shotgun to your head, and says, I'm a shotgun, right, and I would like you to marry my daughter, what kind of relationship would that be? Very dangerous relationship if you don't make it. Right? But it's not a relationship. A relationship means I bring myself, in the full sense of the word of myself, into a relationship, which means free choice. If I cannot freely choose to enter into the relationship, then it is not I that is in the relationship. Right? That's what relationships are based on. When you understand Judaism as a relationship with God, then you will understand that by definition, Judaism was given in a manner that it could never be 1,000,000% proven in a way that you could not escape. You could always say, I don't know. Sure, we believe there is serious enough evidence for the authenticity of the revelation of God at Sinai. But if a person wants to get out of it, they can get out of it. Right? If a person wants to rationalize, you can get out of it. Certainly a person can say, I haven't studied all religions yet, and, I'm not an expert in archaeology, and, I really have to go through all of Bible criticism to make this decision. And it goes on and on and on as we search for new ways to shirk our responsibility to make a choice. Right? A choice is not a conclusion. Right? They're not the same. I chose to live a Jewish lifestyle. It was not a conclusion. There was enough evidence for me to make a responsible choice. But there's still going to be a doubt. Right? Still going to be a doubt. If you want to effectualize a relationship, then realize it's going to be through choice. That's why when the Jewish people were at Sinai, it says that they saw the mountain over their heads. And God said, if you choose the Torah, you will live. And if not, this mountain's going to drop on your head, and this is the end of your life. Right? What kind of choice is that? That's precisely what bothered the Jewish people for 40 years in the desert, because they became so rebellious. However, the Talmud says, when was the ultimate receiving of the Torah? It was in the times of Esther. In the story of Purim, because in the story of Esther, you will never see the name of God. And the Talmud says it was then that they kimu v'kiblu, they reestablished and reaccepted the Torah, and this was actually the high point of Jewish history, when the Jewish people accepted the Torah out of choice. Because it was all concealed. They could have easily said, what a coincidence. Look at the way things went. That's unbelievable. Right? But at that point of concealment, they had the possibility to say, I choose God. I choose God. Very crucial. Because if anybody's waiting for a conclusion, whether they should commit to being Jewish or not, they've got the wrong religion. because it is a choice. But there are choices that are irresponsible, and there are choices that are responsible. A responsible choice means you make a certain amount of research, right? Has to make some sense, right? But then there is that leap of faith. Now, it's not a leap across the Grand Canyon, but every choice is a certain leap. Because by definition, a choice, not a conclusion, but by definition, a choice, has an element of doubt. And this is one of the major problems of people making commitments today to anything. Because there are very few things in our lives that are scientific. That's the big scientific ripoff of our generation. Which is people have been somehow convinced that everything's scientific. Very little is scientific. And you know, one of the most unscientific things in the world is science itself is becoming very unscientific. Right? Scientific is based on, you know, we take the facts, we put in front, we make decisions, and we say, and here are our conclusive results. Nothing in this world is conclusive, except your choice. Your choice is the conclusive. Right? People can't make commitments today because they have an excellent excuse. I don't have all the facts. I'm blind to all the facts. How can I make this decision? Right? How can I marry this girl? I mean, I don't know. I mean, there are millions and millions of women in the world. How will I know that this is the one? How will I know she's my soulmate? Right? So you go out more and more and more. And there's no end to this. Yeah, but you never know. You can go on forever. You never know. Hey, what a fine fellow this guy is. I really like him. Out of the 100 men that I've gone out with, he just shines out like a star. So why don't you say yes? Well, because you never know. I mean, how could I know? I don't know. You never know, right? Goes on forever, this you never know, you never know. Whether we have the guts to say it out loud or it's actually something subconscious. But what holds people back from making commitments is because of the scientific ripoff that you think that there are conclusions in life. And there are very few conclusions, right? The only conclusion is 2 plus 2 equals 4. But most life situations are life choices. Life choices means I do research, right? Has to make a certain amount of sense. I use the totality of my mind, my soul, my emotions. I have to let my mind lead. I don't make choices based on my heart. But my mind sets the ground and I have to have the guts to make a choice. So, you know, I had a friend who was going out with this girl. And, you know, how do you know? How do you know whether he should marry her or not? So he decided he would put her through various situations to check her out. Because you never know, right? How will you know what this woman will be like when she has 10 children? You don't know. You couldn't know, right? What happens if she has 10 children? What happens if, you know, she becomes pregnant in 2 weeks and she gives birth to, like, quintuplets? I don't know. Like, what will she be like then? Right. You don't know. So he went out with this girl, and to test what she's like with children, he borrowed his friend's children, 5 of them. Right? Showed up at the date, says, oh, I'm really sorry. Last minute, my friend asked me, begged me to take his children with me on this date. So do you mind? We're going to the zoo. Right? We're going to the zoo? Yeah, you don't mind, do you? No, I don't mind. Right? And so they went out to the zoo with 5 screaming kids, right? For him to check out whether she's appropriate, you know, whether this is the girl I'm looking for. Well, he was very impressed at the end of the day. And when he asked her out, she was very unimpressed with him. And she said, you know, no, I'm not interested in going out with you again. You wonder why. You wonder why. But you're nervous, right? You're not sure. How can you be sure? I don't know. How can you be sure? When I was going out with my wife, we were at someone's home. And they had a baby, right? Picked up the baby. Oh, look at this baby, right? What a cute baby. And I threw him in her hands, right? She was holding this baby, like, from a distance, right? She looked at me, she said, don't test me, right? What I'll be like with my baby is very different than what I'll be like with someone else's baby. You know, some women are fantastic, and men are fantastic with other people's children, horrible with their own. Other people are wonderful with their own children. When it comes to other children, they can't relate to them. Well, you know. You cannot know. Right? There is no way of knowing the most important decision of your life, which is marriage. Right? Which is actually, I think, not the most important, because the religion, the lifestyle you're going to choose is more important, because it's going to create the context of whether your decision of marriage is going to work. But marriage, everyone can see, whatever perspective they have, that's a serious decision. How do you know? How do you know, after dating this person for 2 months, 2 years, or 20 years, that the day that you'll get married, right, and the next morning will be the same? How do you know, right, that the next morning you'll wake up and right beside you in bed is King Kong? I mean, how do you know? Right, there he is, you know, some big monstrous ape. And you didn't see that. In the context of marriage, so many different attributes are going to merge. Attributes that will never merge while you're living together. It's an amazing thing. Amazing enough to know that statistically they're finding that the predominant number of divorces are from people who live together. You'd think they are the ones who should know better. They're the ones who know the least. Because right? They actually think that they know each other because they've been living together, when in fact, when you're living together, the context does not bring out all the attributes that when you're married together do, and you'll never know. You will never know. There's no way of knowing. You don't know what this person will be like if you're poor. We got married when we're rich. Now we're poor. You don't know what this person will be like when we're rich. And now we're poor. In fact, one of the most serious decisions, if not for most people today, the most serious decision is one that we have the least scientific data to help us make it. And yet we have to make a choice. The choice isn't whether this is the right person. The choice is whether I choose to make this person into the right person. That's the choice. And you can choose to make the right person into the wrong person within a week. Right? Love is not a feeling. It's an act. Right? Obviously there has to be certain fundamental ingredients available to make it easier. But the final end, it's a choice to act. I choose to become. So when I was making the choice to get married, I was really nervous. Right? And of course, I initially tried to put it into a conclusion. Right? And I made a list. I made a wonderful list. And at the end of the list, I counted up the pros and the cons. But I still wasn't happy. I didn't feel that this was honest. So then I started giving, you know, values to each, you know, out of a scale of 10. I'll give this one a 5, or this one an 8, this one. And then I added it up and tried to be scientific about it. Tried to come to some conclusion. But there's no way. You'll have to take a risk. When you're making choices, there is a risk. You can say, I'm blind to all the facts. Right? But we believe God will let you see what you need to see in order to make a choice, not to make a conclusion. Right? Because there's endless facts one will need to see to make conclusions, and they will never come. To make a choice, I can see what I have to see to make a choice. And so I had to make a choice. Right? I had to make a choice, which was a much more difficult choice for me than the choice to lead a Jewish life. Why? Because I can try a Jewish life for a month. I can try eating kosher. I can try making blessings. I can try putting on tefillin. Right? And after a month, if I don't like it, there's no alimony here. I mean, you know, I don't have to get divorced. I don't have to pay these very high lawyer fees and have a very messy experience. I don't have to do that. So actually, it's not so hard to make that choice when the choice isn't complete anyways, because when it comes to Judaism, I can kind of live together, right? And I'll see how it goes in terms of, I'll keep Shabbos. And it makes sense. I see there's a lot here. And I'll have to make a choice to commit myself for at least a certain amount of time. And based on that, I can make further choices. But when I'm getting married, right, in a matter of moments, I say these few words, Hariat mikudeshet li, Gadat Moshe Yisrael. I mean, you know, couldn't they make it a little bit lengthier? The ceremonies, you know, Jewish ceremonies are actually very quick. Nowadays, you see that, you know, they, as they're marching down, they play this slow, and they have someone who, you know, not so fast, not so fast, walk really slow. And it's like this wedding just schleps out for hours as they're walking, giving you enough time to maybe take off, right? While you're underneath the canopy, really nervous. And here comes the 15th bridesmaid, right, with this new bouquet as she's walking down as they're videoing her, and you're saying, you know, you just can't deal with it anymore. You say, maybe this is my chance to take off. I'll jump out the window. So, you know, but in Jewish marriages, this very significant, I mean, we're talking about such a serious decision. You know how long it takes to do this? A little longer than that. Really, you get two Adim, it could be, you know, in the kosher pizzeria, two guys are watching, this guy comes up to this girl, he gives her less than sheva pruta, which today is worth a couple of garot, and he says, here, with this I sanctify you to be my bride in the name of Israel and Moshe, and that's it. The two witnesses say, that's it, and you say, that's it, and they say, mazel tov, and you have a pizza. Right? You have a pizza. I mean, according to Jewish law, that's all you have to do. It's unbelievable, right? This is the most serious decision. Right? Nowadays, we try to really make it big. Right? But we have this tendency to schlep, you know, as long as we can. But in Judaism, this decision is like that, you know? You know, a sheva pruta and a pizza and two witnesses. And that's it. Right? Forever. Serious ramifications. Right? But that's how choices go. Choice is a leap. Right? It's a leap. You've got to make a choice. You've got to make a commitment. It's not like the swimming pool. You know, you can like start at the kiddie pool as you wade in towards the deep end. Most life situations mean you got to take the dive. Thank God, right, there are ways to make new choices, right, which we'll talk about in the upcoming blessings. But at this point, we have to appreciate life is a choice, and Judaism being a book of life is a choice. A choice meaning serious consequences. If I make this choice or that choice, there must be a serious difference. Otherwise, it's not really a choice. It doesn't make a difference. But it is a choice. A choice that is based on reason. Of course, a person must base their choices on reason. But remember, their reason is to get to a choice, not a conclusion. And people schlep their lives out for so long. So I made a choice to get married to Judaism. And I made a more difficult choice to get married to my wife. Because I didn't know. I couldn't know. How could I know? Until today there are things that I'm discovering that I did not know. Right? I did not know. And thank God I didn't know. Right? Because I would have been silly to continue when you think that a marriage is based on two perfect people, right? Forget it. So there's so many things we discover about each other that we had no idea of. In fact, we thought it was the opposite. Right? But that's okay. You didn't make the marriage based on certain facts, conditioned upon those facts. You made a marriage because you made a choice. Right? You made a choice based on certain fundamental factors which were important to go through with the choice. But I have to tell you the truth that even after my mouth went drier than the Sahara Desert when I said, will you marry me? Right? And I still said it, I was still scared. Because maybe I'm making the wrong choice. And so what do you do if you're making the wrong choice? You pray to God. And so every single day I prayed. I said, you know, I might be making the wrong choice. I think I'm making the right choice, but I'm making a choice. And if it's wrong, you could help me out, right? Of divine mind, you could probably, you know, do something. So I prayed each day that if I'm making the wrong choice, somehow let me know. Well, it was coming closer to our wedding day. And it was about 2 weeks before the wedding. You know, all the invitations are set up. got the hall. Mom and dad are flying in next week for the wedding. And this is getting real serious. I mean, this is getting real. So, but I still pray. I pray to God. I said, if I'm making the wrong choice, then help me see that. Whatever it takes. Right. Well, I didn't get anything. No words from above. No heavenly voices. No birds doing something on my head. Or, I don't know, any signs or omens. And so it came to a week before my wedding. Now, I am shaking like a leaf. And I'm saying, look, this is my choice. I think it's right, but maybe I'm wrong. I may be wrong. So listen, don't worry about the invitations. And it doesn't matter. We'll eat the food. But if it's the wrong choice, let me know. But I'm making my choice. Now we're talking about the day of my wedding. And you should know that the custom is that you have two guards that watch you throughout the day, right? You pick two friends that watch you throughout the day, right? And generally they say the reason why they watch you throughout the day is so nothing bad happens to you. I think it's so you don't run away. Anyway, to these two friends, this is it, you know. This is the day of my wedding. Tonight, I am going to be married. All right? My mother and father are here. My sister. We've got the hall. The food's already cooked. I mean, this is very serious. And I went to the kotel. All right? And I said, hey, I haven't heard from you in a while. You know? I mean, you know, if I'm making the wrong choice, let me know. Now, don't worry about the embarrassment it might cause me. That's fine. If it takes two angels to swoop in underneath the canopy and take me out of there, that's fine. Even if at the moment I'm about to say, Hariat Mikudeshut, I get this strange case of laryngitis, whatever it takes to stop me if I'm making the wrong choice. Right? And I got in the cab as we're driving towards my wedding, and I didn't hear a thing. And I said those magic words. I made a choice. I'm willing to accept maybe I made the wrong choice. Right? But when you make a choice, you make a choice. And you go through with it. And if after later you see it's the wrong choice, you'll make a new choice. But you cannot continue to say, I'm blind. It's not the way to live. If you want to live. Computers, they come to conclusions. People, choices. And relationships are based on choices. And Judaism is a choice. A choice to live a life based on the concern to having a relationship with God daily. But at that point, could you know for sure? After my choice, I know for sure that I should marry my wife. Before my choice, I wasn't sure. And to tell you the truth, for the first couple of months, I still wasn't sure. How could I know? But now I'm sure. So that doesn't mean you don't get to a point where you're sure. Right? But it's not a sure based on facts. It's sure based on a much more direct way of knowing things. So I'm sure, as far as sure can be, that there was a revelation at Sinai. But when I made my choice, I wasn't. But I felt there was enough facts, enough evidence, not only qualitatively, right, quantitatively in terms of some kind of codes, but qualitatively in terms of the quality of the lifestyle it offers. Based on that, I made a choice. But it's not anywhere near the difficulty of choice as one will have to make in terms of marriage. But it is much more crucial than the choice of making one's the choice in terms of marriage, because it's upon that choice that's going to make all the difference in the world. As we mentioned before, we all have a religion already. It's not like a question of whether I'm religious or not. You already have rules, laws, values, ideals. You already have glasses through which you view the world, perceive the world, and based on that outlook, you are influence in your behavior. You have your personal halacha already. Right? So it's not a question of whether I am religious or not. The question is whether the religion I live, whether it's Judaism, Buddhism, or Davidism, right, whatever the ism is, and it is influencing our behavior. And it's that religion that's going to determine whether I have a context for my family to work, right, and all my other relationships to work. So it's a crucial, crucial, crucial choice. Right? Most people never make that choice. Most people have blind faith in the religion that they live with. And I'm talking about the personal religion of values and laws that we live with, that most people aren't even aware of the religion they live, right? But we already have it. So, blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who opened up the eyes of the blind, right? I have to say to myself each day, you are not blind. Because each day of living is a day of new choices. And if I want to encounter the day as a human being, then I have to tell myself, you have opened the eyes of the blind. What I need to see, I will see in order to make the right choices. But it's choices. And I can only say it over and over again. My experience is this is the fundamental, one of the most fundamental problems in our generation. Commitment. People cannot make commitments. One of the reasons is based on the illusion that they could make it out of conclusions. Based on the illusion that science is certain and so can life be, and now science is becoming more and more uncertain. And the only thing I'm certain of is the choices I make and the commitment to those choices, to play them out, and perhaps make new choices if I need to. Okay, the next blessing. Baruch Ata, Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Malbish Arumim. Blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who clothes those who are naked. Now, of course, we're opening up in the morning with an appreciation of our clothing. But what's this, I mean, you know, what does it have to do with the last blessing? What does that have to do with the morning blessings? I wake up. Now, of course, everyone appreciates how important it is to have clothing, and you dress those who are naked. But again, notice the presentation. It doesn't say, blessed be you, God, who gave me clothing. Just as it didn't say, blessed be you, God, who made me a Jew. But blessed be you, God, basically, you did not make me naked. That's basically what I'm saying. Right? I could have been naked, but I'm not. Now, what does that mean? That must imply that there's a certain anticipation for nakedness in my life. And I must recognize that it is not so, right? I am not naked. Why? Why? What is so, in terms of choice, what do you think the next excuse people use not to make a choice? The first excuse is I don't have all the facts. And they use that for a couple hundred years. But then the next excuse is, I'm vulnerable. How could I really make a free choice when I'm so influenced? Right? I'm so influenced by the world. Could I really make a free choice? Is this really a choice? Right. It's like a person who opens up a casino in Atlantic City. And a person says, why did you do that? You should have seen it would bring gambling, and prostitution, drug sales, come on. The guy says to you, oh no, I didn't see that. Right? So you tell him this blessing. Pokeach Ivrim. God opens the eyes of the blind. Sorry. Not a good excuse to say I didn't see that. The next excuse he'll give you is, well, what do you want from me? Everyone else was opening up casinos in Atlantic City. How could I not open up a casino in Atlantic City? I'm vulnerable. What do you want from me? And this is the new shtick of people. How can I not do what I do when the media says that's what you have to do? When the media says, this is what a person looks like, how can I not look that way? We're vulnerable, we're bombarded by the media. Every move we make, we're vulnerable, can't do it. Truth is, there's an interesting halacha, Jewish law, that most people really enjoy. Right? There's a Jewish law that says that you're not allowed to throw your clothing in a corner in your room or crumple it up and just throw it away. You actually have to drape it over the chair or hang it up. Right? Something most people say, oh no, you're kidding. Right? Yeah, you know what? Right? I remember when I was in yeshiva, I didn't know this law. And I got this new roommate. And before he went into the room, I asked him, what do you do? So he said, I have my degree in ecology. I said, wait until you see my room. Right? You have a lot of work in ecology. Right? He walked in my room, clothing all over the place. Right? Then I learned, Talmud says you've got to honor your clothing. Why? Because your clothing honor you. Right. One rabbi in the Talmud called his clothing my honorables. That's why clothing is so important. Because clothing really makes a difference in terms of how you're going to feel about yourself today. And so my clothing is a focus to remind myself I am not vulnerable. There is a certain level of self-respect that is available to me upon which I can make choices. So very many people shirk the choice because of the claim of vulnerability. How could I keep Shabbat? None of my friends keep Shabbat. So what's that got to do with it? Is this what you choose to do? Is this what you feel is right to do? And it's very often that we are not clear anymore what we feel is right and what we're really afraid of saying is right because of the fear of vulnerability in terms of they'll see me fail. I'll go back to my community and I can't keep this stuff up, so I'm not going to do it. Right? That's how people deal with life. So many things in our lives that we would like to do, we don't do because we've basically accepted a position of vulnerability that I'm so influenced by my society that I could never do this, so why even try? Why even try? We're so vulnerable. Remember the first Shabbat my wife and I wasn't the first, yeah, it was the first Shabbat my wife and I had guests. And we're married. And I happened to meet these two girls on the street, and I don't know how it happened, but I ended up inviting them for Shabbat. They came to us for Shabbat, these two girls, and at the end of the Shabbat, they said, listen, we never thought of ever getting married. Right? Why? Because we see all over the United States such terrible marriages that we decided not to get married. And now after seeing your marriage, we've decided to get married. I got nervous. I thought they meant between each other. So thank you. Wonderful. Right? So, no. I mean, to men. Right? I was overwhelmed. I thought most people would like to get married. Right? At least like to try. Right? They said they decided they'd never want to get married because they saw such terrible marriages. What for? And it's based again on this, well, I'm so vulnerable. Everyone's so vulnerable and everyone is so moved by everything else going on in the world. We could never succeed, so why even try? Right? Why even try? We have to wake up in the morning and say, Malbish Arumim. It's so powerful. Each day I say to myself, God, you dress those who are naked. I'm not so vulnerable. I'm not so vulnerable. If I make a choice, I can make it. I can live up to it. If I plug into my clothing and I say, hey, a little self-respect of it. Right? Who are you? Who do you want to be? Right? Make those choices. The next bracha. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Matir Asurim. The next excuse not to make a free choice, to run away from it. The first excuse is, why did you open up that casino? He says, I was blind. Then you tell him, God opens the eyes of the blind. He says, well, I was vulnerable. Right? Everybody else was opening up casinos. How can you expect me not to open up a casino? You tell him, God dresses those who are naked, my friend. Right? But now, of course, the choice is very clear, the choice he must make. So why don't you close the casino? You know, he'll say, what? So much of my time, so much of my energy, so much of my life is bound up with that casino, I can't even get out of it if I'd like to. I am a slave to my past choices. That's the next shtick. Right? Slaves. We plead slavery. Right? We plead slavery. So many people would rather be slaves than free men. It's true. Eric Fromm has a very, very beautiful book called Freedom, Escape from Freedom. And it's just long examples how people actually run away from freedom. Because freedom is frightening. Slavery is so comforting. Because if you made the decision for me, so I'm not responsible. I don't bear the consequences because I didn't do it. So many people rather be slaves than free people. And in our own lives, we can see how we've put ourselves into slavery by not questioning ourselves, by not challenging ourselves. We have already testified to the self-imposed slavery, to norms, to accepted values. We just don't want the struggle and the pain to think about it and make perhaps a new choice and have to make a new choice. People are slaves. There are so many people that went to school for dentistry. After 3 years of being in dentistry, they hate it. But they're going to be dentists. Why? What, I'm going to throw out 3 years of my life? No, why should you? You might as well throw out the rest of your life for 3 years. I mean, you're miserable. You don't want to be a dentist. So just face up to the facts. I don't want to be a dentist. Right? So you made a mistake. And now you'll take a new choice and get it out. Nobody. Right? Who's got the guts? Right. I go to school. I want to be a doctor. Can you imagine the amount of money? Right? Put into 2 years of medicine. Right? And after 2 years, it's clear. I don't want to be a doctor. I hate being a doctor. And I really only want to make a lot of money. I don't want to help people. I want to make a lot of money. That's all. So why have to spend so much money, so much aggravation and time to be a doctor? I don't want to be a doctor. So why don't you just quit? Go into something else. Are you crazy? I gotta throw out 2 years of my life? $20,000 down the drain? No siree. I gotta put in another $50,000. Right? Another 15 years before I figure this one out. Crazy? Right. I go to a store, I buy myself a drink. Take the first sip, I go, yuck! Right? I throw it away? I'm gonna throw it away. I just spent money on this drink. I'm gonna drink it. Right? And I better enjoy it because I made a decision. I mean, it's crazy. We do these type of things. Right? We claim we are slaves of the past situation or the past choices. Right? The past choices, yeah.
A lot of people, I think, use that exact argument against religious Judaism, that you're enslaved within the religion.
Could be. If the Jew didn't say these blessings, they might be slaves. Right? Meaning they are not looking at themselves and honestly asking themselves, what do I have to do? And they'd rather some rabbi just make the choices for them. But the truth is, as it says in Pirkei Avot, one must grapple at the feet of the Talmid Chacham. The Nefesh Chaim says a person has to question the rabbi. Right? Because only then can they really understand what the rabbi is suggesting. And a good rabbi is not going to say, this is what you should do. A good rabbi is going to encourage, ask me so that you'll understand why this is the best thing to do. And sometimes a choice means you have to make a choice on who do you think is the best surgeon in the world. And then you have to rely on them. Right? That's a choice. Right? I just don't go pick up any old rabbi to give me advice. I go and choose who's the best rabbi. But you can't say, well, you're a slave because you're relying on this brain surgeon, right, to decide whether they're going to operate on your brain. Now, you should make a free choice and decide that on your own. Well, how can I decide that? I mean, I haven't been a brain surgeon for 20 years. Right, so I'll make research. I'll research the various brain surgeons in the world. And I have to make a choice and rely on one. Right? I'm not Moses, but after my research of the various religions, I choose Moses. Right? I choose Moses. So sometimes a choice might look like you've enslaved yourself, but it's not. It's a choice. I make a choice. There are certain rabbis that I believe in have the kind of ability to give me the guidance I need in my life. And I'm willing to accept what they say. But that was my choice. Right? That's based on choice. That's not running away from choice. Okay? But Matira Sarim, to so many people that are stuck in the past, they cannot get out of their lives. It's the old foolish king. Remember, the Yetzer Hara is an old foolish king. The good inclination is a young child. And you know what drives us crazy about children? They ask questions. Too many questions, but they keep asking questions, thank God. And you cannot cage that kid in. What happened last moment is not necessarily what's going to happen in this moment. They're unpredictable. Right? Because they are free in the moment. But people believe that the past is a security blanket and want to freeze life. Freeze life! I made a choice. Whether I made a choice or my mother made a choice that I'm going to be the next greatest doctor in the world, I'm not sure, but now I gotta make a choice. I'm not a slave. God frees those who are enslaved. If I make the choice, I'll get all the help I need to get out of it. So I was teaching a class in yeshiva, and there was this fellow coming to my classes quite regularly, and he seemed to be very turned on to what was going on. And one day, at the end of the class, he left like he always left. I mean, everyone leaves at the end of class. And I happened to go to the fruit market to buy some fruits and vegetables. And I happened to meet him. Also, as we're picking oranges, okay? And he looks over to me and says, "Oh, by the way," right? This is a person who's only been in my class for about a month, steadily. "By the way, I'm leaving tomorrow morning for India." Like, I only deserve the "by the way." So I was quite put off, I might say, yeah? And I said, "Why?" Right. He said, "Well, you know, I'm traveling throughout the world. And when I bought my ticket, I established my schedule. And it's written on my ticket, you know, October 16th. That's tomorrow. I'm leaving." I was overwhelmed. Right. I was overwhelmed. I said, "Are you enjoying your studies in the yeshiva?" He says, "Yes." "Are you finding it incredibly meaningful?" "Oh, it's been the highlight of my trip so far." I said, "So why are you going?" He says, "Because 6 months ago when I bought my ticket, I decided the various stops that I would make and the various dates that I depart." So I looked at him and I said, "You're a slave." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" He said, "You're a slave. You're a slave to a decision you made 6 months ago. You're a slave." And I walked out. Yeah. I walked out. And he was one of these Eastern "be here now" people. Right? That's what I really appreciate. You know, "be here now." He's over there. Right? "Then. Be there now." Right? He's not here. So I said, "You know, you're not now." And I walked out. The next day he walked into the class. Right, with his ticket in his hand, he said, "I'm not a slave. I'm a free man." I couldn't believe it. I pulled such a fast one on that guy. On that guy. Can't believe it. Well, vulnerable guy. Anyways.
Yeah, he was naked at the time.
It was the oranges. He was just caught off guard. That's how people live their lives. They're not living their lives anymore. Their lives are living them. They made a choice in the past. And they are stuck. They are just stuck. They can't change. They are forever old. They might look young. They're forever old. Because they cannot make choices. Right? They just plead slavery to the past.
Sometimes it's like,
No, there's only one consideration. Your life. Your life is worth more than millions and millions of dollars. And if it means after going to school for 10 years and you just blew $100,000, maybe it was worth it to know that that's not who I should be. Right? That's not who I should be because I'm not going to be happy. Right? There are no financial considerations. People put money before their lives. Right? Money before their lives. That's the nice thing about Israel. Right? In Israel, it's hard to make enough money to put it before your life. And you're forced. It's a wonderful place. Right? People say, wow, the land of God. Why wouldn't the land of God be like America where you can make a lot of money? Right? Because in the land of America where you can make a lot of money, you can lose a lot of clarity. In the land of Israel, you don't have so many opportunities to make a lot of money. And therefore, you're forced to reevaluate what's really important in our lives. Right? I'd rather be a poor man, clear and alive, than a rich man, dead and dormant, because of some past, right, that he's still trying to catch up with. Right? So yeah, it sounds radical. What's even more radical is this, it makes sense. Right? That's even more radical. Right? And that's the problem. That's a serious problem. Right? That people are stuck. They are stuck in their paths. They cannot change their lives. Right? And it's not that they couldn't change their lives, but they're so comfortable in the self-imposed slavery, right, of their original choices or the choices made for them by their parents or by their society or whoever made this choice that this is what life is all about. We're playing it out. Right? We're playing it out. We're not alive. Yeah.
What about people who are, you know, constantly making changes? You know? One job a year.
Well, that's part of choice. Part of choice is a commitment, right? Part of choice is a commitment. Now, it's very easy sometimes that a person is running away from choices because they didn't really make the choice. And they were never sure about their choice because they thought choices should be conclusions when they don't realize that the surety of your choice is after you make it, not before. So there's various other problems, right, that goes on. They never really made a choice. But I personally, when I was in yeshiva, I went to 6 different yeshivot. Now, people looked at that and said, what an unstable guy, right? Can't stick around in one place. No, because I made choices, and at the end of a certain period of time, I felt I now make a new choice. I felt it was a statement of strength. People saw his weakness. Look at this guy, right? This year he's in this yeshiva, next year he's that yeshiva, right? But I know I made the right choice, because after being in so many different Jewish worlds, I was able to create an Israelite. Right. And bring all those worlds together for people. Right. But those were my choices. Right. And people thought, oh, he's so wishy-washy. Can't stick to one choice. I would stick to my choice. Right. I didn't move from yeshiva to yeshiva every day. Right. I stayed in each yeshiva between 6 months to a year and one yeshiva for 2 years. And then after that I said, I got what I wanted from this place. I'm not going to stick around here just because I've been here. Right. I need new things. Right. I went on. You have to make choices. You have to make choices. That's what life is. Life is taking a risk. The past is secure. The past is already. The past is known. But the future is a risk. And the future is unknown. But if you want a future, you've got to take a choice. Take a step into it. So the past is secure. But the past is gone. Right? The past is gone. It's only important if it is giving me guidance in the present. But most people, I don't know, most, many people live in the past. They're stuck. You've got to make a choice. Right? But choices, you know, they're tough. Because it's a risk. Right? I'm scared. Right? I'm scared to make a choice. What if I'm wrong? What if I decide I'm going to keep Shabbat? I go home, tell my family I want to keep kosher, and they go out on a limb and they change the house and make it kosher. And what about a year from now I decide I can't live without oysters, right? Oh, I can't live without clams and lobster. Oh, ah, you know, what'll be then? They'll all laugh at me, right? Let them laugh, right? I made a choice. I'm living. I'm breathing. Right? I care about my life. And I made a new choice. Right? A lot of people don't want to get married because maybe I'll get divorced. That's ridiculous. Right? That's ridiculous. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. And if you do, so what? You made a choice. Right? In Judaism, success is the choice. Right? Not what happens afterwards. The rest is in God's hands. But the success, successful living is making choices, responsible choices. Not eeny, meeny, miny, mo, right? Or flipping a coin. Right? It's taking the trouble and the pain to make that choice. Let's look at the next one. Blessed be you, God, King of the Universe. Zokev kefufim. You erect those who are bent over. Now, what does it suggest, the idea of bent over? When you see someone bent over, what do you see?
Unbalanced?
Beaten? Someone's bent over, beaten, what else? Bent over? Age, old, and crippled. Bent over. What's the next excuse? The first excuse, I was blind. Why did you open up that casino in the first place? I was blind. Right? I didn't see all the facts. How would I know that there would be drug sales in this place? I thought there would just be a nice place for good college kids to hang out. So you say, well, now you see after fact that it's not. Right? So why did you open up, right? Come on. You could have seen those facts. So he says, well, come on, everyone else was opening up casinos. I mean, expect me not to open up casinos? Everyone else was doing it. Right. Say, God, close those were naked. Then you say, well, so, why don't you close down that casino? He says, what? All the time and money I put into it. I can't get out of my casino. Right? Well, the next thing is, what are you talking about? Make a choice and just close it down. But the next excuse is, I could never walk away from it erect. I've been handicapped by the past. It's not like I'm a slave to the past, but I've been handicapped by the past. That's the next reason for not making the choice. Because yes, even though I could close it down, I couldn't start all over again. Right? I'm too old to change. It's not a question of changing, it's a question of like, I've been so burnt out by my past. You really expect me to make a future? No. Can't do it. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing, but the people live with this self-imposed handicap. Right? We hide behind the shadows of some handicap. Frightened to make the choice. And let's do one more blessing for the day, and you'll have a couple of good excuses for the tomorrow, why you don't come to class, right? Blessed be you, God, King of the Universe, who spreads the earth over the water. What does that mean? Spreads the earth over the water. What would happen if today I walked out and the earth was not spread over the water? I would sink, right? I have to realize that underneath all the ground is water. The next excuse is the fear of failing. I might sink. Right? Even though I'm not handicapped, but after seeing what an idiot I've been in the past, after making all the wrong choices, how do you know I'm not making the wrong choice again? After spending 3 years, right, in dentistry, how do I know I'm not making the same foolish choice and going into acting? And 3 years later, again, I'll look like a fool. So maybe I just should stick with this. I'm afraid of failing. I'm afraid of failing. But we, in the morning, remind ourselves that over the turbulence of life, over the instability, the possibility of failing is the support of God. And that if you make that choice, you'll get help. Fundamental idea in Judaism, a person who comes to be pure, they help him. And in the way that you want to go, they will guide you. The angels, the celestial beings, whatever. People are afraid of failing.
But they don't realize the illusion they're trapped in. Because here are two paths before me. One path which offers me the possibility of significant, meaningful living, holiness, happiness. And another path, less promising. Now, I could take what's behind door number one for the big prize, but what happens if it turns out to be a whistle? Right? I'll look like a jerk, right? I'll really look silly. I'll really look silly. In other words, it's very possible that behind that door, is the biggest prize in the world. But then again, it's very possible that behind that door is a Hershey bar. And I've got the opportunity to either go what's behind door number one or keep what I already have.
What do you already have?
What do I already have? A dinner for two at Yossi Pekin. Kosher Chinese food, okay? Yeah. This is a tough choice, right? This is a tough choice. But then again, I might really win. And then again, I might lose. But you have to stand. It's not really a choice. Because in final analysis, if I don't choose to take the chance, then I'm stuck with two dinners at Yossi Peking, which is really nothing. Right? It's really nothing. It just doesn't make you feel as if you lost, but you didn't win. Right? But in fact, you lost. You lost. People don't recognize that. People are trying to convince themselves that they didn't lose. That's what they're concerned with. Not whether they really win. And therefore, here's this mountain that I could climb. I could make it to the top. Or midway, I might trip and fall to the bottom. So what do? I stay at the bottom. Right? Don't you realize? Either way, you stayed at the bottom. Right? If you would have chosen to climb the mountain, you might have made it to the top. You might have fallen to the bottom. If you choose not to climb that mountain, then you accept remaining on the bottom. And therefore, what's the difference? You could have made it to the top, or you end up in the bottom. Now you're for sure at the bottom. The difference is, I don't feel like I failed. You might not feel like you failed, but you did. You did. Because you didn't make a choice. Because for the Jewish people, success is the choice. It's the choice that's the success. That's all God wants us to do, is make the choice. Be committed to it. What will happen? I don't know. I don't know. Life is in God's hands. I make the choice. The rest is God's hands. And whether I'm at the top or come tumbling down to the bottom, the truth is, on the yardstick of what really is the top, I made it. Because the top is the choice. Right? The people who make the choice are at the top. And even though in our society there are various other definitions what we'd consider being at the top or at the bottom, in Judaism, when you make the choice, you're at the top of the mountain that counts.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.